Take a unique look at the National Football League with Pro Football View from the East, a program dedicated to bringing listeners in-depth coverage on all 32 teams. Join host Joe Tufaro, a lifelong Giants fan, and Dennis Agapito, a die-hard Jets fan, as they offer up hard-hitting opinions and analysis on the NFL from a New York perspective. So, let's start the show. From the East, here's Joe and Dennis.
Yeah, that's right, folks. You're going to get some hard-hitting, in-depth analysis on the NFL from two guys who really know what they're talking about, well, at least one of them. I know at least one of them does. So you can take your pick as to which one knows. But, of course, we welcome you back to another wonderful episode of Pro Football View from the East. This is Dennis Agapito. And as always, I am joined by a man who I now have to, again, I have to kind of sort of rephrase the way I pronounce his team. They're no longer the New York Giants. They are the first place New York Giants. And that is a big fan. And also the World Series Mets. Big fan of both teams. Kind of an odd thing here. I'm a Yankees Jets fan, and Joe is a Mets Giants fan. So kind of an odd thing there. But, Joe, how you doing today? Great to have you aboard. We got a wonderful show lined up. A lot of exciting things going on in the NFL last week. Going into this week, some things are starting to take shape. Very exciting.
Yeah, that was quite the week last week. There were a lot of exciting games, a lot of good games, a lot of big comebacks. Not by teams that were unexpected in some cases, but some pretty exciting games. I actually like this. I will say this on the air. I actually like this London thing because on the West Coast, it's kind of nice. You get up about 7 o'clock. It's the first quarter's over, but who cares? And then you don't have to watch the pregame show. So you just watch football, and then you watch football, and then you watch football, and then you watch football. And you don't have to listen to every comedian's pick and Fox doing all their little skits and all this kind of stuff. You just get to actually watch the game. And it's actually been pretty nice. I'm glad they're doing more of them. And I hope they stick a team over there. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, I was over there in London when the Jets played, and there was a lot of discussion. I mean, Jacksonville just signed a new 5-year deal to play over there. They're obviously the front runner if they're ever going to put a team over there. There are a lot of logistics. How do you work guys out? Do free agents want to go there? How do the tax implications work? But, I mean, the NFL is definitely super interested in having a team there at some point. It is an emerging market. At the Jets-Dolphins game, I mean, there are fans of every team. Now, the majority Dolphin fans, a lot of Dolphin fans there, because of Dan Marino and, surprisingly enough, Ace Ventura. A lot of people liked Ace Ventura. Joe, and just a quick aside before we get into some of the current events, I was on the tube, as they call it there. I called it the subway, and people gave me dirty looks. But there was a family there, a husband and a wife, and they had different jerseys on. One had a St. Louis Rams jersey on. He had actually traveled to Orlando for a family vacation, flew to St. Louis to watch a game, and flew back. The wife had on Pittsburgh Steelers colors. They had two young children. The daughter had on Green Bay Packers. And the son had on Cincinnati Bengals. So I kind of asked him. I said, the family is divided. How did everybody pick their teams? And basically with the kids, it was interesting because the girl liked cheese and the boy liked cats. That's kind of the way. And it's kind of interesting how people pick teams. I mean, I've met a lot of people from Ireland there. And I said, well, you're from Ireland. What drew you to the New York Jets? And surprisingly enough, it was green. They liked the green. And they also liked New York because there are a lot of Irishmen in New York. Kind of interesting ways that overseas fans pick a particular team. And yes, I do like it, even for us on the East Coast. I mean, by the time I have my coffee, eat my food, it's 9:30. The game is on. I know the game was on Yahoo, which has its pluses and minuses. I mean, it gets broadcast all over the world. You know, a fuzzy screen every now and then, depending upon how great your internet connection is. But they did pay a lot of money for that. It will be nice when it's on regular television next week. And that's a game we're going to discuss a little bit later in the show. But, yeah, it is interesting. It was interesting being over there, Joe, covering the team, seeing the fans, and just kind of seeing how they react, seeing all the colors. There is a growth in the market for NFL football. I agree with you 100%. It may take 10 or 15 years, but they will eventually have somebody playing over there, and how they're going to work out the logistics of playing home games, maybe four home games there, four home games in the state, and a satellite kind of training facility and those kind of things. But I'm sure that they already have people diligently working on it. But, Joe, let's get into some current events involving your New York Giants and something that we've been touching on for a long time, which is the return of Jason Pierre-Paul. Obviously had – now look, people are saying things like, well, he shouldn't have played with fireworks. Well, I'm sure he looks at it now and says, I wish I wasn't, but he did. You can't cry over spilt milk. He injured his hand very badly, and on a personal level, we all feel terrible for him. And obviously it's been a struggle between him and the organization to kind of figure out what exactly to do. The November 17th deadline was looming. Something had to kind of break. And finally, he gets signed to a one-year deal. So why don't you kind of fill us in as to what you know, what's going on with him, what the game plan is for him moving forward, when we might actually be able to see him on the field.
The good news is, obviously besides the personal side of it, is that he was doing things. And again, here's a guy who hasn't played football that long, but he understood that just jogging wasn't going to do it, or just running around a track or whatever. He knew that he needed to get, you know, bags, you know, dummies, and go up against that and hit a board and hit these different things. And so he was doing football drills, and he came in at 268, which is his playing weight. They all thought that was fantastic. Tom talked about it this morning, saying how he really was surprised what kind of shape he was in, and that they were in there joking about it and saying, you know, let's get this part started now. You know, your next job is to convince those guys, the medical guys, that you can play. And basically what he's going to do, Dennis, is he's going to go through the meetings. He's going to go through all the jog throws. He's going to start to learn all the playbook stuff that's a little different, don't forget, because they had a new defensive coordinator. So he'll do all that stuff. And then Tom said, but his practice starts, he'll slide off to the side to do individuals, to work with the medical people, to see what he can do, to see that they're comfortable that he's going to clear. He may wow them and be cleared tomorrow. He may not, and he may not be cleared for, I guess they have a 2-week roster exemption, Dennis. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so, you know, he could come back after the bye. You know, they could do a couple of different things with him. But basically it's up in the air at this point. I guess the contract that he signed is, as they put it, incentive-laden, as we had suggested, that if he comes back on the field, plays in a certain number of games, gets a certain number of sacks, whatever number of plays, whatever he does, however they structured it, I'm sure that to both sides, you know, benefit for him to play well. And Tom's going to take it as it is, as he always has. He had nothing to say when there was nothing to say. And now the update today, which was, as you can imagine, was the only question anybody wanted to ask him today. He explained it very well. Said, hey, we're excited to have him back. He's great in the room. Everybody was excited to see him. He wants to play, and the guys want him out there. And now it's just a matter of convincing the medical staff, as everybody else does on that team, have to convince the medical staff on a weekly basis that they can get out there and play.
Yeah, and just to kind of explain the way this worked was, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul did not sign his tender, which means he wasn't under contract. The first time he came in, which was earlier in the year, you are allowed under NFL rules to give a player a physical examination, even if they're not under contract. For example, a lot of times when they do tryouts, you can do a tryout and a physical at the same point. That doesn't mean that player is going to be under contract. You're just kind of doing a pre-physical examination. And if you see something you don't like or whatever, then maybe you don't move forward with that player, or you can even bring them back later. That's what happened with Jason Pierre-Paul. When he came in earlier in the year, they were able to give him – now, he didn't do a tryout. He didn't do any running on the field or anything. This is why these tryouts generally take place on Tuesday. That's the team's day off. You can't try out a player with your entire team at practice. That doesn't work that way. You can bring some players in to kind of help maybe throw the ball or whatever, but when you do a tryout, then they usually have the physical combined with that if they're going to bring them in. Jason Pierre-Paul just had the physical early in the year, and the Giants probably said something like this to him. You're going to fail this physical. We're going to put you on non-football injury. You're done for the year. So go home, come back later. Now, when he came back now, it was do or die. because the Giants are looking at it like we have this deadline looming over us. So is Jason Pierre-Paul. So this is what also spurred kind of the changing of the contract. They're like, we're not paying you $870,000 a week, no matter what. So we did the physical examination. We're happy. We think we can pass you, but you're going to have to sign this kind of contract. And I'm just guessing, but this is what I'm assuming the contract looks like. His minimum base salary is $745,000 for the year. Now, again, we're in week eight, which means that we're going into week eight. He's going to actually get paid for week eight. Even being on the exempt list, he'll get paid. He gets paid about $44,000 per week. So there's 10 more pay periods left in this season. So it looks like he's going to make about $44,000 no matter what happens. They're probably not going to put him on NFI no matter what. I think there would be a grievance at this point in time since he's under contract. Ultimately, the worst thing that could happen for him, which he'd still get paid, is salary, paragraph 5 money. His season salary is they would put him on injury reserve if they felt that he couldn't contribute. Because, again, you're wasting an active roster spot, Joe, while you're keeping him on there. If he needs a few weeks to get healthy, and then you know those roster spots are precious. Right now he's not taking up a roster spot because he's on the exempt list. So until he gets – once that two-week period runs out, he goes on the active roster, but he will be getting paid. Now, we talk about the incentives, and real quick, any incentive, in my opinion, will count on the Giants' salary cap. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be paying him that money and won't get a credit later. And let me explain, and I'll let Joe jump back in. Let's say they said to Jason Pierre-Paul, you get 5 sacks this year, we'll give you $1 million bonus. Okay? Jason Pierre-Paul had 12 sacks last year. That $1 million is going to go on the Giants' salary cap. It's going to count against their salary cap because it is likely to be earned given what he did last year. Now, if he earns it, okay, he gets paid the $1 million. The money was on the salary cap, and the salary cap remains the same. If he doesn't earn it, the Giants will get $1 million credit going into next season. They add up the likely to be earned incentives that were not earned, and the unlikely to be earned incentives, which didn't count in the salary cap, which were earned, they add them all together, and that all comes out in the wash. And then the money that carries over into the next season will sort of be set the way it should have been. Now, here's an interesting thing just quickly. This is how teams can beat the salary cap. Because if you have a guy who got hurt the year before, you can put in a lot of incentives that are easily obtained. And then they didn't count on your salary cap because they were unlikely to be earned. But when they are earned at the end of the year, they add them up and they said, well, you had $3 million in salary cap space, but $5 million in unlikely to be earned incentives. Guess what? Instead of carrying over $3 million, now you're carrying over negative $2 million. So just kind of wanted to lay out how this kind of works. I can almost guarantee you that any incentive in Jason Pierre-Paul's contract right now counts on the salary cap. That doesn't mean that they're going to have to pay it. We'll have to see how the season goes. But that's kind of where they are financially right now. Again, the numbers have not been totally laid out, but I can't see them paying him a base salary higher than his minimum right now, Joe.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Dennis. And I think everybody came to their senses. And like you said, deadline's looming and doesn't make sense to make no money, as we talked about earlier. And, hey, the incentives are what they are, you know. Again, maybe you can make, maybe you could put a couple in there that you kind of know there's no way he's going to get to make it sound better, to make it look better to him. Like if he gets voted to the, all pro or something, like you said, it doesn't matter because it doesn't go against the cap because it's an unlikely one that he's going to earn. And they'd be very happy if he gets, if they put it in there for 5 sacks, 10 sacks, 15 sacks, they'd be very glad to pay those. That's why he's here. So, and again, I'm sure some of it's based on a number of plays and games and that kind of stuff. So I think Jerry Reese has probably been fair with him. He looked fairly happy when he came back. He said all the right things. He's thanking everybody in the organization. And, I don't expect it to carry. I don't expect this one to carry forward, though, Dennis. I don't see this as, oh, I'm so happy the Giants were so gracious. They let me come back and give me a second chance. That when he's a free agent next year, he's going to give them any sort of discount, or he's going to do whatever he can to stay here all of a sudden. I don't think he's going to be one of those players that'll stay here for any reason. But we'll worry about that one when it comes. I want to see how he makes it through the week. the question to Tom Coughlin today, I guess the most telling question in the press conference was, so do you expect him to be on the plane to go to New Orleans? And he said, we haven't decided yet. And so there's, you know, Tom never leaves stuff open just for the sake of leaving it open. If the answer was no, the answer would be no. So we'll see what he does. I think they're both anxious to see what he can do and what it's going to look like. And hopefully he gets back to as close to being JPP as possible. Here's another guy, Dennis. We now have Jason Pierre-Paul trying to get back to being JPP, just as we have Robert Griffin trying to get back to being RG3 someday. Here's the legend of JPP. Let's see if he can live up to it and return to that form and hopefully do it in blue if he does. But we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, well, I'm just kind of glad because we discussed about him. Maybe he should have worked with the organization in the first place. It kind of worked out whether he had come in or not. This was kind of probably going to be the timing because he could have stayed on NFI up to about 11 or 12 weeks, even further than that if they activated him. So it worked out just fine as far as that goes. I think the money-wise he's going to get, as long as everything works out, again, there could be something like an in-game roster bonus. Every time he's active for a game, he gets a bonus. That's a nice little incentive to get you out on the field. That's something that protects both the player and the team. Hey, look, if I'm in the game, I'm getting more money. Just quickly want to lay this out too. The Giants' salary cap situation is actually pretty good this year. They're a little over $13 million under the cap. So kind of no matter how they structured this deal, I don't see it taking a big chunk out of their salary cap to where they're going to be like, oh, my goodness, what if we get a rash of injuries and now we got to start moving money around? Now, the Giants have done the last 2 years, they kind of were in a little bit of salary cap issues. They were a little tight. They've kind of been able to work through things, get guys extended like Eli Manning, put a nice product on the field, and put themselves in a position financially to move forward and have some stability. I'm sure they're happy to have Jason Pierre-Paul back. It's good that he is back. We all felt bad for him for what happened to him. And, hopefully he can be, a difference maker and get past this. I don't know if we're going to see right away the same old JPP. Maybe we never will, but maybe you can see a guy who can at least resurrect his career, have something moving forward. And I think no matter who you are, you'd like to see that. So congratulations for him getting back with the team, the first place New York Giants in a division that is very interesting, to say the least. Yeah.
And one more thing about him, Dennis, and then we'll move on to what the other things we want to discuss. This actually works out for the Giants, I think, because as we talked about earlier in the year, the big games that he had at the end of last year were after they were out of it. They played six fairly poor teams that were out of it. That was almost like playing, some preseason games. And I think this really worked out now. It gives the Giants like an 8-week tryout to see where he is, to see where he's going, to see how healthy he is, to see how motivated this maybe has changed him into a different person. And now maybe they don't mind having that discussion of an extension. And, they were a little wary about giving him an extension. That's why they did the franchise tag, because he had a really poor first half last year and didn't really turn it on to the last 5 or 6 weeks against some poor competition. And you worry, we'll use the baseball adage, don't believe everything you see in April and September, because you're not playing the same things. The rosters are different, pitching is different, all that kind of stuff. Same thing in the NFL. When teams are out of it, you're going up against guys that are less motivated and the coaches are being fired and all kinds of different things going on. I think this really gives them an 8 or 9 week test period to see who this guy is going to be in the future, and it'll make it easier to negotiate a contract next year if they decide to keep him.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, I think it works out good for both sides. The clock was ticking. I don't think the Giants have made a super duper financial investment in him to where they're saying, oh my goodness, $8 or $9 million to finish out the season. No, it could be as low as say $500,000. It could be higher, but you know what? The higher it goes, the more production they got. So this is why it works out well for both sides. So we're happy for him. The first place New York Giants in a very interesting division. We're going to get in a little bit about that when we're going to go. And we're going to kind of do a little bit of quickly going through the schedule next week and looking at some teams. And we're going to kind of play hot or not, or risers and fallers, whatever you want to call it. And here's the thing that I want to look at, Joe, is just like, okay, you're starting to see some separation, some teams emerge that you think, again, you never know. It's still early enough that some team can collapse. But you're starting to see some separation. You're starting to see who the contenders are, maybe who the pretenders are. And then you got those guys who are in the middle. You got those guys who are in the middle, 3 wins, maybe even 2 wins. Is somebody going to emerge and kind of make a run and put 5 or 6 together? Is somebody going to put 2 or 3 losses in a row and put themselves out of it? And I just want to kind of go through the schedule here and get your opinion on, you know, contender or pretender, rise or fall or hot or not, whatever you want to call it. You pick the adjective and we'll throw it out there. But the first game is the Thursday night game coming up. And, you know, here are the Miami Dolphins, and I mentioned them a couple of weeks ago. You know, we talked about Dan Campbell. And I think this is very reflective upon a guy who walked into the head coaching job and said, they don't want me here. The owner doesn't want me. Sean Payton's coming here. John Gruden's coming here. Bill Cowher's coming here. You know what? I'm going to do it the Frank Sinatra way, my way. And if the players don't like it, the front office doesn't like it, I don't care. You know why? Because I'm probably not going to be here next year anyway. And guess what? Thus far, now I know they've beaten Tennessee and Houston, two not-so-good teams, but they didn't just beat them, Joe. They shellacked them. So are the Dolphins for real? I mean, they definitely put themselves back in the picture here. I mean, are they risers? Are they hot? Are they not? Are they contenders or pretenders?
Well, I think, you know, and we discussed this earlier in the year when we were doing our picks, saying that I thought Miami was going to take a step forward. I thought they had some of the pieces in place, and, you know, they lost a couple of guys, but they had, you know, maybe they had replaced them, and you know, other than I watched the game against Houston, and the first half was spectacular. Second half, I've never seen a defensive line jump off sides more, and I'm a referee. So I see it all the time, but I've never seen a defensive line play so poorly against a team like Houston. But I think Miami is real, and I think the Dan Campbell thing is a lot like what happened in Indianapolis a few years ago when Chuck Pagano got sick and Bruce Arians took over. That was his audition, right? So he's not auditioning for the Miami job. He's auditioning for the Tennessee job or Houston or whoever's going to fire their coach next year. They're going to take a pretty close look at Dan Campbell. So this is his chance, right? This is his, who cares if I'm going to be here? I'm going to be somewhere if I do a good job here. And he's certainly gotten the players to play for him, and he's certainly made them look good. I think I've picked them to beat New England this week. And I picked all but one game last week, so I'm pretty good at this stuff lately. I picked them to beat New England this week. I think New England's ready for a little bit of a letdown short week. I think, you know, this is the time that they get ambushed a little bit. I wish the game was in Miami. Then I would really feel confident about it. But I think this tightens up that division, Dennis. You know, we talked about this last week. All of a sudden they win. They're 4-3. The Jets are 4-2. Going into the week, you know, the Bills, unfortunately, have had a lot of injuries and kind of dropped off, but they're right there. So even though maybe no one's going to catch the Patriots, I think that this is the Dolphins' chance again. This is that step-up-in-class game that the Jets failed last week, right? You played well against the Patriots, but you lost. So now you got that on your record of, okay, we're going up against the big guy on the block, and we didn't beat him. Well, here's Miami's turn. You're 0-2 in the division if you're Miami. You're going up against the Patriots. You're going to have to win a division game somewhere along the line. This would be a great one to win and put you back in the mix and put you back in the conversation. And I think they're on the way up. I'm not sure they're going to get all the way there, but I would put my money on them now that they're going to have the season that you and I thought they were going to have in preseason before everything that happened and before losing before getting rid of Joe Philbin.
Yeah, definitely. And I look here. I kind of agree with you in the fact that the Patriots, again, short week, they play the Jets, and look, they were completely one dimensional. Their offensive line, the Patriots' offensive line, is right tackle Cameron Fleming. They have Shaq Mason, Trey Mason, a rookie playing right guard. They have Dave Andrews, an undrafted free agent, playing center because their center, Brian Stork, has been out the whole year. They have Josh Klein playing left guard and Sebastian Vollmer playing left tackle, filling in for the injured Nate Solder, who is also he's also filling in for the injured Marcus Cannon, who is replacing him. I mean, the Patriots came out against the Jets, and they made no bones about it. We can't run the ball. We can't run it. So you know what? We're going to throw the ball. Here's the thing with the Jets. They spent a ton of money in their secondary this year for one reason and one reason only, stop Tom Brady. And guess what? They just threw the ball and threw the ball and threw the ball. A one-dimensional team. No running game to speak of. Their top rusher was Tom Brady. No yep. pass rush in the second half. No way to stop the pass. And you know what? The Jets on the defense of New England did two things. They took out Brandon Marshall, and I know Ivory was a little banged up, but they took him out of the game. That's why I knew they weren't going to win. Look, if Brandon La Butterfingers doesn't drop seven passes, and Julian, this game wasn't even close. This was a game where New England was ripe for the picking. They were ripe for the picking, giving all their injuries on offense. No Deion Lewis, no Jabal Sheard on the defensive side. Don't display that because he's a very good pass rusher. And if the Jets are going to – look, when the Washington Redskins are missing six starters, the Jets should win that game, and they did, especially at home. The Patriots, this was the game that they were supposed to go up there and say, you know what, we're going to take advantage of our opportunity. Not only were they outplayed, they were outcoached. Joe, I'm going to give you an example real quick, and we're going to move on. It's first and 10 from the 12-yard line. They're on the opponent's 12-yard line, New England, on the Jets' 12-yard line. Yeah. Okay, 2 minutes left. 2 minutes. The two-minute warning just sounded. You got all your timeouts. They run a play. I think it was like maybe a 6 or 7 yard pass to Gronkowski, whatever it was. They don't call timeout. I mean, I don't know how Todd Bowles was totally out coached. Every single coach on the Jets coaching staff was out coached in this game. Matt Patricia, Josh McDaniels, and Bill Belichick out coached Shane Gailey, Casey Rogers, and Todd Bowles. But on that play right there, as soon as the tackle was made, timeout. Where's the timeout? You know what Todd Bowles said? He said, well, I was waiting for them to stop them. I said, well, you know what? At this point in time, you've got no choice. They have to stop them. Right. You have to call your timeouts and hope they stop them and hold them to a field goal. Because guess what? If they get the field goal, you're only down by six. You got to have enough time on the clock to go down the field and score a touchdown. And you know this, Joe. You can stop the ball on offense a lot of different ways. An incomplete pass, spike the ball, run out of bounds. On defense, there's only one way to stop the ball. Unless they stop it for you, timeout. And right there was the most egregious mistake that I don't know why people – I mean, it's been mentioned, but I don't know why people aren't calling them out more on that. I've got a feeling the Dolphins pass rush, Cameron Wake and Olivier Vernon, are going to get up after Brady. They're not going to be able to be one-dimensional and survive against this team. Maybe the secondary isn't as good, but I don't think that pass rush is going to disappear down the stretch. They don't have to blitz to get to the quarterback. The Jets do, and that's the big difference here. I agree with you 100%. I like the Dolphins. Right now I see the lines that be fluctuating between 7, 7.5, and 8. New England, I know it's tough to go up to Foxborough and win, but eventually somebody has to do it. So let's move on to our next one. Here's a team that I'm looking at and saying maybe for a couple of bad breaks they'd be in a better position. They're 2-5 right now, the Chiefs. They're coming off a victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I know they lost Jamal Charles, and maybe that hit them a little bit. But you know, they're playing in London. Talk about London. They're playing in London against the Lions, who just fired everybody on the offensive side of the ball like it's their fault. I mean, the Vikings went in there, sacked Stafford 7 times. I mean, this team is in disarray, the Lions. We're not surprised that they're out of the playoff race. I think we both felt that they weren't going to make the playoffs. I didn't think they were going to be this bad. But you know what? The Chiefs win this game. They go to 3-5. Excuse me, 3-5. I was right the first time. 3-5.
Yeah.
And my opinion is this. Halfway through the season, if you're 3-5 or better, you're at least in the conversation. You're at least there. And Kansas City has a very good defense. They get after the quarterback. And I won again, they could lose a couple games after this one if they do win it and fall out of it. But I'm just saying right now, taking a stab at it, do you look at this team and say, could they make a run, put 3 or 4 wins together and put themselves back in the conversation? What do you think about that?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think they've just had a rough time of it. And I think they can, like you said, I think they'll win a few games, but I still think the class, you know, unfortunately, I talked to a friend of mine last night who's a big, big Chiefs fan, and I looked at him and I just shook my head, and he does the same thing, and he said, ever since that Bronco game, they just don't seem like the same team. And, you know, you lose Jamal Charles, who, you know, I talked about this in the preseason. You know, he's a guy, he's a little guy who likes to run like a big guy. and unfortunately he gets hurt. And, you know, he's going to miss games every year, and now he's going to miss the rest of this year. And I just think that they just, I don't know, they have a rough schedule. I think the division's getting tougher as it goes along, because I still expect San Diego to come off the disaster of this week and play better. I think Oakland's doing what I said they were doing. They're starting to show that they can play as a team. You know, you got the Broncos out front, who I'm probably going to pick to lose this week finally. But I don't know. I just think they're too far behind, and they got too many other issues to deal with. And I don't think they can make that run. And again, maybe this week is even worse, that you're going up against a Detroit team that suddenly has new coaches and new philosophy, and the guys feel bad that they got all these guys fired. Sometimes that's all it takes to turn it around a little bit. So we'll see. But I don't think they're I just think they're too far back. I think they got buried too early and by all the teams in their division. And I just think that they're in a tough spot.
All right. How about this? The Rams. The Rams are 3-3.
Mm-hmm.
Their offense is putrid. They're only putting up about 18 points per game. They're worse in the league at passing the ball. But their defense is real tough. They have 23 sacks so far this year. So, I mean, they're going to win on the strength of their defense. They play in what used to be a tougher division than it is now. They're playing the 49ers at home. So, you know, could they easily go to 4-3? What about the Rams, you know, maybe making some noise moving forward? Again, Jeff Fisher was kind of on the hot seat earlier this year. He couldn't afford not to have a good year. Seems like the division is a little bit more up for grabs and not quite. And I know Seattle could turn it around and this and that, but they're playing the 49ers right now, who just looked god awful on Thursday night. I mean, they looked like they didn't even want to be there. How about this game right here, putting them 4-3 and maybe giving them a chance to, again, get in the conversation?
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. I think they win this game because San Francisco's got a worse offense. And you know, they're kind of mirror images, these two teams. And I wasn't all that impressed with Arizona playing against Baltimore the other night. So you kind of look at that and say, all right, if that switch is over, if that flips, you know, you get one loss, although Arizona's playing Cleveland. You know, it's all going to depend schedule-wise here, but I think they could put up a fight against that team, and I think they could keep themselves in the conversation. So I would say the Rams are a team that's in the middle that has a chance to continue to compete, let's put it that way, in their division and even in for the wild card, as the NFC is not looking all that strong with a lot of big, big teams in it this year. It's not going to be obvious who's who's going to get the wild card. So I think that they're a team that could easily continue to grow and continue to move up the ranks.
All right, next one, and this one's going to kind of hit home with you, and it's a team that I predicted, and you know, I was looking again. We'll get into San Diego in a minute, but I was predicting that they were going to win the NFC South, and they're probably not going to win the NFC South. But two wins in a row, I put them at 3-4, and they're playing the Giants at home this week. Trying to look at the line here real quick. Let me just find it here. New Orleans is favored by 3. So this is on a neutral site. It's a pick'em game, and this is an important game for both teams here. So the New Orleans Saints, I know you think they're not going to win. Obviously, you're going to put your green and blue glasses on. But you know what? Look, if they did happen to somehow pull this out and get to 4-4, I mean, do you think that they're just, are they good enough? I mean, they went to Indianapolis. They're not so good. They played the Falcons. The Falcons kind of shot themselves in the foot. They haven't been the juggernaut at home that they usually have been. This Haola Kiaka, the guy they got in the second round, the linebacker, has been terrific. He very well could be rookie of the year. He's got 4 sacks. He's got a pass defense, a bunch of forced fumbles, 37 tackles. You know, nice pickup there by them. So do you think I know you don't believe it, but if they were to win this game, are they back in the conversation or they are what they are? They're just kind of an 8-8 team, just, you know, with a big-name quarterback.
Yeah, I would say that that's exactly where they are, especially if they lose, which I expect them to do. I expect them to lose in a shootout. But I think that's what happens here is, you know, Rob Ryan's defense is just awful. You know, they're last in the league against the pass. You know, he can come up with all his excuses he wants. He's got one trick. You know, he blitzes like crazy when he thinks he has to, and people are going to pick them apart, and it happens again. They lose to good quarterbacks. They lose to other good quarterbacks is what they lose. And, you know, Drew Brees is still Drew Brees. He's still going to put up a lot of points. He's still going to put up a lot of yardage. But he's missing some guys there that he still wishes he had. I mean, can you imagine that team if they still had Darren Sproles and Jimmy Graham and a couple of the other guys that they've let walk away? I just think that their defense just isn't strong enough. And Rob Ryan's, again, he's a one-trick pony. And I think that they always fail in the tough spots. And so I don't think – I think with the Carolina being 6-0 and Atlanta being 6-1, if they lose this week, the Saints, and they're 5, again, you're never out of it because certain things could happen. But I think they kind of get on a little run. And again, we've been there with the Giants in some recent years. You get on a run, you win 3 or 4 in a row, everybody thinks you're great, and then all of a sudden you lose the one that matters. You know, they'll go up against the Panthers in a big game and they'll lose. They'll go up against Atlanta in a big game and they'll lose. So I think they're going to be a mediocre 7-9. You know, we all thought, starting out the season, Dennis, 7-9, 8-8, 9-7 is going to win this division. Well, that ain't going to happen. That may have been the worst prediction we had all year. You got 2 teams with 6 wins already, and you know, somebody's going to get 10, somebody's going to get 11 maybe. And so I think that just leaves the Saints in the dust.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to get 2, probably right now, 2 out of that division in the playoffs. I guess you could say that they've been replaced by the AFC South. So maybe we misspoke. We meant to say the AFC South would be the division that would maybe get a 7-win team into the playoff. Now, here we're going to go to a game now that's going to hit home and hit me hard, which is you know, my preseason darlings, the San Diego Chargers, who have just, you know, continued to spiral downward after getting shellacked. I don't want to hear about the score. It was not indicative. They were getting crushed and they got some garbage points at the end. But, you know, here's a game. They're going out to play the Ravens, who are now 1-6 and you know, done. In my opinion, they're done. I don't think they're going to win 10 games. This is a Chargers season right here. This is the Chargers season. If they want to have any hope, look, here's something that you look at when you're maybe a fan of a team. If your team just stinks and they have no quarterback and nothing, and you're sitting in a situation, you say, you know what, you know, winning a game or two might really hurt my chances in the draft. So, you know what, let my team be 2-14 or 3-13. I want that high draft pick. I need that quarterback. The Chargers don't need a quarterback, so they necessarily, where they're picking in the draft is not as relevant to a team that really needs a quarterback. This is their season. Now, last year they went out there and they won a game where Philip Rivers took them down the field and they needed a touchdown and he did it. So, I mean, I know that things didn't go so well against Oakland, but I'm looking at this game here. If the Chargers want to have any hope of, you know, unbreaking my heart, they got to win this one. And if they do, I mean, I'll throw up this schedule while you're giving your analysis, but if they do, I think they got a shot to maybe, again, put themselves back in the conversation after we go over some of these other AFC games. But, Joe, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think because, like, I did the same thing you're doing. I'm looking at their future schedule here. You know, they were awful this week. I watched the shortcut of this game, and it was amazing. I never had the ball. It was just kind of scary how poorly they played in the beginning and how they just got outplayed completely and got so far behind. But like you said, you go up against a Baltimore team that can't seem to win a game no matter what they do. Then they get Chicago in, and they play Kansas City, then Jacksonville. You know, before you get to your divisional game against, you know, you're going to have to play Denver again. But, you know, the problem is the back end of the schedule, Dennis. So they may get a few wins going forward. But if you have to play Miami, Oakland, and Denver the last 3 weeks, and actually Denver, Kansas City, Miami, Oakland, and Denver, you know, you get Denver twice in the last 5 weeks. Now, they may not be playing for anything. You may get the free game at the end of the year where Peyton Manning doesn't play and everybody doesn't play because they've already wrapped everything up. We don't know if that's actually going to hold true or not, but I think they have too much. I think they have this easy middle schedule, 3 games mm-hmm. here in a row that they could win, but then the last 5 could be brutal on them. And I don't know. I guess we're just we just missed on that one. I don't think they have enough, and I don't think that they have a good enough defense. They just, and for some reason Melvin Gordon didn't play till the fourth quarter the other day, so I'm not sure about the coaching staff there either. And They just didn't look good at all. But yeah, I'll say, what's the record now? You know, add
2-5
more of that. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard to win 6 or 7 more games. That's for sure.
Yeah, you know, look, I'm just saying, if they get a couple wins under the belt, they put themselves back in the conversation. You're right. I agree with you. One thing about them, and this has been for a couple of years now, they just seem snake bit. I mean, they went out, they got some offensive linemen, and they, I mean, the last game I was watching them, it was just it pitched to the Steelers game, which they could easily have won. I mean, the Steelers didn't play all that well, but it seemed like every other player, an offensive lineman, was going out. I don't even know where they were getting linemen from. And it just seems they're snake bitten. You know, one thing about the Jets, and just a quick aside, is that they've been very fortunate with the number. DeMarcus Ferguson, since 2006 when he was drafted, has never missed a game for the Jets. Never. He started every game at left tackle. And Nick Mangold got a little banged up at the game last week, maybe a little questionable this week. But he's only missed maybe 2 or 3 games. Again, drafted in 2006, 2 or 3 games. I mean, most teams would dream of that. 10 years of two key members of your offensive line only missing 3 games. I mean, and realistically, I know going back for the years, they've never really had a major, major injury. Maybe one guy here or there, but, you know, not a guy who was irreplaceable. They've been very, very fortunate. A lot of Jet fans are spoiled by how few injuries the Jets have had on their offensive line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really makes – even the Giants, you know, have had a lot of injuries – Will yep. Beattie before the season even started. I mean, here's a guy that you could have moved to the right side if you liked Flowers on the left side and wanted to start that one. You think you'd be better off right now. It's just very surprising. A lot of Jet fans don't realize how lucky they are on how the line has stayed intact. Before I get to the Jets-Raiders game, which is a very important one, I want to get this one first with you. I think it has a lot of playoff implications here, and I think I know who you're rooting for in this one. It's the Seahawks at the Cowboys. I mean, this is a big game for both of them. The Seahawks went in and they just literally destroyed the 49ers. The score is not indicative of the way the game went. 49ers looked flat. Their offense was terrible. I mean, Jim Tomsula got asked, how do you get your offense going? He goes, we got to get our offense going. Well, that's a great answer, Jim. I mean, thanks for the insight there. I mean, I could have asked the wall that and got the same answer. Yeah, I could have asked the wall and got the same answer. But you know what? This is a huge game for both these teams. Seahawks go to 4-4 if they win it. You know, you look at the Cardinals. They looked a little vulnerable in that game last night. St. Louis, we talked about, improve. But, again, are they unbeatable? Their offense certainly isn't great. And the Seahawks go in there with their defense. I still think they got 2 remaining with them. And you know what? The Cowboys win. Look, they go to 3-4. And that division is still wide open. Still a lot of things that can happen. Big game for both of them. I know the Seahawks are 6-point favorites here, but – you know, Dallas did run the ball on the Giants, Joe, and I think you would agree with that. Matt Castle Matt Castle basically just, you know, sucked the life out of Dallas in that game. Dominic Rodgers Cromartie with another touchdown. He had the fumble recovery in the first game, the interception there. But what do you think about this game and the importance for both teams? I mean, the Cowboys can't go to 2-5. I don't know if they're going to be able to recover from that, even with the division kind of being around that 8-8, maybe 9. Maybe 7, I doubt it. I think 8-8 wins that division. I think 9 wins definitely wins that division, depending upon when Tony Romo can come back. But at 2-5, it's going to be tough for them to get to that 8-9 win plateau.
Yeah, and I think that they're, you know, again, they cause their own problems, so I never feel bad for them, not just because they're the Cowboys, uh-huh. but I never feel bad for them because, to me, again, you cause your own problems. You bring in Greg Hardy.
Yes.
You know, everybody makes him out to be the second coming. The guy's got 3 sacks in 2 games. Big deal. You know, they came at the end. They came against a very poor team. They came in the first, you know, first play that he came out. He got a sack. Oh, he's great. He's going to really want to play. If you watch the Giants game, he got manhandled by Eric Flowers. He tried to come inside, and he wound up on his back more times than not. He took a hit on the first play by the fullback, our little Nikita, who came in and just blew him up. And I think he decided, I'm not going in there anymore. And so he kept trying to duck inside at Flowers, and he just got manhandled all day long. The guy's not a great player. Now you put him on the sideline, and again, this is the only thing I'll ever give Troy Aikman credit for. He even said, "What's Dez Bryant with a broken foot doing on the sideline, jumping up and down, getting in people's faces? Tell him to go sit. You know, he's not even dressed. Go sit down. You got a broken foot, you moron. What are you doing jumping around and waiting to get stepped on the sideline?" Not the brightest guys in the world. Never have been. The organization's always been like that. But again, you bring in a guy who's going to be another troublemaker, and you put him with Dez, who's a troublemaker, on a losing team now, you get a recipe for disaster. And, you know, as somebody else said the other day, boy, Cowboy fans will probably never pick on Tony Romo again after you realize what else is out there. And you and I talk about this all the time, Dennis, right? What's the alternative? A couple of years ago, they said, oh, you know, we're going to extend Tony Romo. He hasn't won a playoff game. He hasn't done all stuff. Well, this is what else is out there. Brandon Whedon and Matt Castle. And Castle threw, what, three interceptions on four drives in four series? He threw three interceptions. So that's what you got. And you can run the ball all day because it's the exact same thing. You know, we'll let you do that because sooner or later you're gonna have to put the ball in that guy's hands. And we have all the confidence in the world that he'll screw this up. And I just don't see them making any kind of move. I think Seattle knows that they have to put it down now, and they've got to win. Again, you saw that they have a chance now. Maybe Arizona doesn't look that great. And they need to make a move. And I just think, you know, the Cowboys, if they lose their fifth straight game, and their schedule doesn't get much easier, and you can't force guys back, you know, and getting Dez Bryant back with Matt Castle or Brandon Whedon is not going to do you any good. You need Tony Romo back there, and again, he may not come back till Thanksgiving, and that may be too late. They may have eight losses by then, and I think Seattle's still in the middle of this, still in the mix, still knows how to play, still knows how to win, and I think the Cowboys are kind of losing out on that because they really have no answers for anything.
Yeah, so I mean, look, this is a humongous game. I think if I were putting some crackers on this game, I would take the points in the Cowboys just because of this. They were able to run the ball against the Giants of a good run defense. I know Seattle's got but the line is good. DeMarco Murray's with Philly. Darren McFadden looked a little bit better. They're going to probably try to feed him, eat some clock. Castle, maybe he a little rust, shake some of the rust off, not make so many mistakes. Don't love the Seahawks offensive line. Just don't love their offense, period. They've kind of had a little bit of a struggle getting in rhythm. And, you know, Wilson's been sacked a lot. You always hate to lay a big number on the road. And I'm not saying that Seattle's not going to win this game. It's going to be a tight game. But this really is kind of, I can't say 100%, but you got to look at it and say maybe 85%. This is Dallas' season. They can't go to 2-5. They can't do it. They got to pull out all the stops to win this game and get to 3-4 and keep themselves in the conversation. And again, I think in the division, the NFC East, I think you agree with me, one team is coming out of this division. The winner of the division is going to the playoffs. There's not going to be two teams from that division that are going to make the wild card. Right now you're looking at, I mean, you know, Carolina or Atlanta right at this particular point in time. And Minnesota, if they can beat Chicago and go to 5-2, they'll be in great shape. We discussed some of these other teams. Can they make a run at it? Can they put themselves in the conversation? The Rams, et cetera. We'll have to see how it goes. Another couple of weeks, we'll have a clearer picture. But here's a game before we get to our two games of the week. And this is kind of a game of the week because it does have big playoff implications, Joe. And even though it happens to involve my team, the Jets at the Raiders. And look, These are not Al Davis's Raiders, okay? They're much improved. It took a little bit of time. Reggie McKenzie, the GM, went in there, and he inherited an absolute mess. Here's a guy who probably walked into his office and wanted to cry because he probably looked at those contracts and just said, look at what I'm stifled with. A couple of years ago, you know the Oakland Raiders had like a $72 million payroll because they had so much dead money from the bad contracts that – Reggie McKenzie said, I just got to clear these contracts out of here, eat the money. I'm going to put this terrible team on the field. And now it seems like the draft picks, Amari Cooper looks good. Carr looks good. Crabtree looks pretty good. There's Khalil Mack. They're starting to get some guys. I mean, they're starting to gel a little bit. They're 3-3. They're in there. And you know what? They're going up against the 4-2 Jets who are playing in their place, coming off a very difficult road game. And I just wonder here, you know, will the Jets have a little bit of a hangover? This is a big game moving forward, Joe, for the AFC playoff picture because Oakland moves to 4-3, has that tiebreaker against the Jets. Jets move back to 4. Jets go to 5-2 and they come back for a home game against Jacksonville, hey, they could be 6-2 and sitting pretty. This is a humongous game for both teams for the playoff picture. And you know what? The Jets have never historically played well on the West Coast. I'm very concerned about this game and the Raiders coming in and stealing it.
Yeah, I just had one question for you, Dennis. So Nick Mangold is okay. I saw him get taken off the field at the end of the game last week.
Well, the x-rays have come back negative. And now Nick has missed very few games. And look, Cromartie got carted off the field in the first game of the year. We all assumed done for the year, ACL. Next week he was out there playing. And Nick Mangold is a warrior. I got a feeling he's going to be listed as questionable and will ultimately play. That's my guess. Don't know. We'll probably have some further information, you know, a little bit later in the week. Everything came back negative. The guys, I've seen things happen to Nick Mangold that I thought, oh, broken ankle. And then two plays later, he's back on the field. So I never put it past Nick Mangold to be out there on the field. But if he's not, they're going to be playing second-year Dakota Dozier at center, a guy who was really drafted as guard tackle, who never started a game in the NFL. So it will be a big deal for them to have him. Hopefully he can be around 100%. Maybe he might not be 100%, but he's the quarterback of the offensive line. Very important for them. You know, the one thing about the Raiders' defense is they stop the run. They're terrible against the pass. They do stop the run. But the Jets are a team that, as you saw last week when Ivory couldn't run the ball, they need to run the ball. They need to run the ball. And you know what? Bill Belichick set out the blueprint. And this is a copycat league, and you know this. They're going to double Brandon Marshall and say, beat us with your other receivers. And you know what? Maybe our front seven, because we're pretty darn good against the rush. I think they're third in the league. We can stop Chris Ivory. We'll hold him under 100 yards. So you know what? Beat me with Eric Decker, Jeremy Curley, Chris Owusu, and you know the tight end that's caught three passes, Jeff Cumberland, and Bilal Powell out of the backfield. And, you know, beat me with those guys.
This is what
Bill Belichick did. He said, beat me with these other guys. And guess what? They couldn't do it.
Yeah, no, they're going to put it in the hands of Ryan Fitzpatrick, and then they're going to let, you know, see what he can do. And I agree with you. And, you know, Nick's a big – the reason I ask about Nick is because, again, if you have to play the second-year guy that's never played, you know, he gets to look up and there's a guy standing in front of him and says, hi, I'm Justin Tuck. Watch what I can do after 10 years in the NFL. So I think it is a big, big concern if he can't go or if he's not 100% because – you're going up against some guys there that, again, have gelled a little bit or playing better or really good against the run. And your team is exactly what it's always been and exactly what it should have stayed and been since you've made the two AFC championship games. It's run the ball. That's what this team's all about. This is how it works best. And I think that, you know, you say you've never played well out here. You've played well in San Diego on occasion, playoff game. You played the hot dog game, as we call it, with Mark Sanchez at you guys, the Raiders. So, you know, you've had some success out here. I know Jet fans are always fatalistic and, you know, you've same old Jets and all that kind of stuff. But I think you've had some good games. I don't see this being one of them. I think last week's game is a huge letdown. I think you went up there and played well enough to win. And like you said, you didn't. And then it got to the point where Tom Brady, they even said it on the broadcast at one point and say, boy, he's just standing back there in the shotgun. They're not even faking like they're going to run the ball anymore. He's just standing there, picking these guys apart, getting rid of the ball, getting the ball out of his hands. And if there's anybody who can do that as well as he can, you know, who's on the way up, who's a young guy who that's what he likes to do, and it's Derek Carr. And so if that's going to be the case, you know, if they can stop you from running the ball and put the ball in Fitzpatrick's hands and then be able to stand back there and throw the ball around the field, I think it could be a long day for you. I believe I picked the Raiders in this one in my picks for the week. And again, I think Nick's health is kind of key to this game. I would say it's even more of a sure thing that they don't win if Nick can't go for 70% or if he has to take a few plays off here and there. And again, I know he's a tough guy. I have a ton of respect for Nick Mangold. But sometimes, you know, guys are too tough and they get out there and they're not ready to go. And you've got some guys on the other side of the ball that can take advantage of that. So we'll see. I'm glad to see the Raiders back. I'm glad to see the Raiders playing well. I'm glad to see the organization getting back to where it should be. I think the NFL needs certain teams to be good and to be interesting. And so I like to see them. I like to see them on the way back and getting their situation cleaned up.
Yeah, if Dakota Dozier plays, unfortunately, Justin Tuck, I think, was recently put on the injured reserve, but he'll be looking at Dan. Yeah. I forgot the injury. I think it was a knee injury. Dan Williams will be the guy that he will be looking at. Yeah, it just recently happened, so maybe you weren't up to date on that. So yeah. Dan Williams, though, the ex, actually Arizona Cardinal, will be the one that he'll be looking at. He's been a pretty big pickup. They gave him a pretty nice-sized contract. So, like I said, they're good against the run. We'll see. I know you're saying they had a couple wins out there, the hot dog game. That was a few years ago. But, you know, last year they went to San Diego and got shellacked. And the year before that, I believe they went – when the last time they went to Oakland, they lost. So, again, it's always a concern. Look, if this game was at MetLife, a 1 o'clock game, I would say, hey, I feel more comfortable. It's the bottom line is here is this is a big picture game in the long run. Still a little bit early in the season, but we're getting to that halfway point. This is a big picture game. This might be one that you look back on and say, yeah, whichever team gets it is going to look back on it and say, maybe this is the one that propelled us into the playoffs and propelled the other team out. So big game for both of them. I do worry about the Jets having a little bit of a hangover. Look, the Raiders went down to San Diego. They took care of business. Now they're coming back home. The Jets didn't have to go far to go to Foxborough, but they lost. Now they got to go all the way to the left coast. We'll see what happens there. Let us get us to a couple of finish up with a couple of games of the week here. And I'm going to start off with this one. It's actually a pick'em game, according to Vegas. You got the Bengals at the Steelers. Ben Roethlisberger still a little bit up in the air with the knee. Who knows if he's going to play. I still think the Pittsburgh Steelers have weathered the storm enough, whether he plays or not, whether they win this game or not, to go to 4-4. I think down the stretch, as long as Roethlisberger can be healthy, they can be a 10-win team and make the playoffs. But obviously, this is huge for them. Steelers win. Bengals get their first loss of the year. Would anyone be surprised if I told you at the end of the year the Steelers ended up winning this division and Cincinnati didn't? Joe, would you be surprised to hear that?
No, not at all. You know, we talked about this. If the Steelers were able to win a couple of games without Ben, that's what they needed to do. So they did the exact opposite the Cowboys have done, right? The Cowboys lost their quarterback every game since. The Steelers were able to steal a couple of games. Whether it be with Michael Vick or this other guy they got who didn't look all that great the other night. But like you said, you don't even mind. If you lose this game, you're 4-4. You still got a chance. You're still in a wild card position. You know, there's not that many great teams in the AFC this year either. So, you know, you're still in a good spot. And then you get Ben back. And that's at least you know he's coming back and you know he's going to be what he was. So that's a whole nother story there. But, you know, I wouldn't put it past them being able to win this game because their defense seems to be playing a little bit better. Cincinnati's going to have to lose sometime. I don't believe anybody anymore goes undefeated in the NFL. And even though we have a lot of teams this year who are there between the Patriots, the Bengals, the Broncos, the Packers, and the Panthers, you know, all at 6-0, I don't think any of them make it to the end. I don't think any of them get their heart broken by the New York Giants in the Super Bowl this year of having an undefeated season. So I don't think that happens. So I think this could be one of those games because of, you know, who it is that they're playing, that they've always had their number, sort of, that they could falter here. And you know, it's at Pittsburgh. So I think that's the difference there. I think I did pick Pittsburgh to win this game this week, and so it was a good choice by you to talk about this game, Dennis. I think this is one of those. This could be the one that Cincinnati kind of stumbles. And then they could go on. And then they could win 5-6 more games. So, again, it's not going to hurt them in any way. But I agree with you. I think this could be one of those that the Steelers kind of steal, and then they keep alive in the wild card conversation.
Yeah, and even kind of keep the division at least in sight. They keep the Bengals in sight and, you know, put the one loss on them. And, you know, with tiebreaker scenarios, those kind of things. This is why it's a big game for both teams. Again, the Steelers don't want to go to 4-4. I still think they're in the wild card. But basically, if they go to 4-4, they're kind of, you can kiss the division goodbye. This is what you're looking at. Some of the teams, the Jets, people say, well, the Jets still have a chance to win the division. It's fading. If they lose to the Raiders, kiss the division goodbye, even if the Dolphins do beat the Patriots. I mean, some of these things you're going to look at and say, okay, here we are. We're looking at these teams. Okay, they're in there for a wild card. Forget about the division. Division's out of reach. Here's our last game of the week. I think the best game of the week on tap, but I want to just lay out some numbers here quickly. The Packers at the Broncos, and you know what? They're both undefeated. And I think I know where you're leaning. I know where I'm leaning. And I'm leaning towards the Broncos. I mean, excuse me, leaning against the Broncos, towards the Packers. Because here's why. They have 18 touchdowns by their offense this year, the Packers. The Broncos have 9. The Packers can – this is why we talked about elite teams last week. And the Packers are an elite team. Well, why are they an elite team? Well, they've got 23 sacks. They've got they got elite quarterback, first of all. First and foremost, they have an elite quarterback. Okay? Here's Aaron Rodgers' quarterback rating, 116. Here's Peyton Manning's quarterback rating, 72. Okay? So there we go. So right there. They're not putting the ball in the end zone on offense. And you know what? Yeah, they do have the good defense, Denver. They have an excellent defense. But you know what? I watch Tom Brady with a makeshift line tear apart the number one defense in the league and put 30 up and put 350 yards passing. I can't understand why the Packers can't go in there and have success and put 27 to 30 points against Denver. And if Denver's offense cape and Aaron Rodgers doesn't throw pick sixes, I mean, it's not in his repertoire. So they're not going to be able to rely on Josh McCown giving them a gift. I just don't see it. I think the Packers are the best team in the league right now, soup to nuts. They can beat you a lot of different ways. And you know what? I know we're playing in Mile High and all that stuff. I got to say, I just like the Packers here. I'm willing to lay the 3 points on the road. You always hate to lay points on the road, but I'll lay the 3 points on the road, and I'll go with the Packers. And you know what? Maybe this is finally karma catching up with Denver because, you know, they've had a couple of squeak-out wins there, and they could easily be 4-2 or something like that. We know that. They are what they are, but I just think the Packers are a superior team.
Yeah, I don't think there's any argument there that this is the game that they finally lose. I think that, you know, like you said, their luck, however you want to say it, luck runs out. Their defense just can't. You're not going to get, like you said, gifts from Aaron Rodgers. You're not going to get fumbles. You know, you're also not going to get bad coaching. You're not going to take guys, instead of taking a knee at the end of the game, fumble on their own 10-yard line and have you run it in. You're not going to get a bunch of pick sixes, but you may throw a couple more, because that's what Peyton's been doing. So I think this is it. I think it's the end of the run. Denver, again, the end of their undefeated run. If you look at their schedule coming up, Indianapolis, Kansas City, Chicago, you know, San Diego twice, I think that they still do fine, and I still think they come out on top in the division. Unless they just completely fall apart. But I think they really screwed up this offense, and there was no reason to. And they've gotten lucky, as you say, for the defense to bail them out a few times and for the other team to bail them out a few times. But I don't think that happens in this game by any stretch of the imagination. And I think Green Bay just keeps rolling towards an NFC championship that they thought they should have had last year. And I think they're strong, and I think they're ready to go.
Yeah, like we said last week about elite teams, they can beat you in a variety of ways, and the Packers certainly have that ability. And it also doesn't hurt to have what is arguably, and probably most people would agree, the best quarterback in the league. But, Joe, I just want to thank you for another fantastic episode. We went over a lot of stuff. Good to see Jason Pierre-Paul back. Hopefully he can contribute for the first-place New York Giants. Went over a lot of games here, but again, these games have a lot – not every game has significance, but when you're looking at it and saying, boy, this game is we'll call it you know, a teeter-totter game. You know, which way does – it's level now. And when the team that wins is gonna be on top, so to speak, or on the bottom, depending on how you look at which way the teeter-totter is favorable for you. So, you know, a good measuring stick for what's going to happen in the playoffs. A lot of interesting, exciting action going on this week. And, you know, next week, week 9, will kind of put us at that halfway point, 17 weeks. Obviously, you never really have a technical halfway point. A few weeks down the road, these buys will end. Everybody will be on the same page as far as the number of games they played, and we'll get a reel to analyze who's in it and who's kind of out. And they always have these wonderful statistics. I remember a few years ago, they had the, like, 1-8 Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the hunt, which always made me laugh. But, you know, we'll start to see some separation. But, Joe, thank you very much for another wonderful episode. Got a lot of good information in there. Looking forward to the games this week and looking forward to getting another episode next week and analyzing what happened in Week 8.
Well, thank you, Dennis. It's always a pleasure. And look forward to a lot of good games this week. And we'll talk to you next week.
All right, gang. Listen, if you want to follow us, we're on Twitter. I'm at PFVFE, and Joe is at Tufton. So for Dennis Agapito and Joe Tafaro, please join us next week for a wonderful episode of Pro Football View from the East.